My name's Stephen Headley, and I'm a trade unionist. When I first met David, I was the London Transport Regional Organiser of the RMT Union, which organises tube and train and bus workers. And I first met David at Finsbury Park, which is a North London station, and he appeared on the picket line and was filming the strikes. After that, I bumped into him occasionally on similar picket lines, and over time, we became very, very good friends. We kind of really, really kind of bonded together, which is strange because we had some similar views, but some very different views as well. David was a socialist. He was very pro-Palestine, and he was just very honest and kind, and I would like to think I've got those qualities as well, but we did disagree over climate change and sometimes traffic proposals. But it was somebody I never fell out with, which, given my temperament, is quite an accomplishment.
Right. Well, look, this is an important factor, isn't it, in a lot of these things, that you can disagree with people and still be friends. In fact, professional politicians are quite often talked about as having a terrible row in the House of Commons and then going to the bar afterwards and having a laugh about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that the things that we disagreed on were that important. I mean, for example, had he been a racist or had he been a Zionist, I don't think we could have been friends. But the things that were that we did have differences about, he was just such a lovely guy and non-confrontational and helpful that you couldn't fall out with me if you
No, it was
wanted
difficult,
to.
certainly. I mean, what he was doing as a video journalist really was quite important. He's one of those sort of unsung heroes where, when you see confrontations, for example, developing at a demonstration or maybe a picket line or whatever, you see the film of it, and you see, but you don't always think who was there filming it and who was there recording it.
Yeah, and funny enough, about 10 years ago, when my friend Pedro Mihajs was sacked, David kind of put his safety on the line. He was confronted by a number of very aggressive security guards who threatened to physically remove him from a public place. And of course, David, being David, stood his ground, and we all backed him up, you know. But he had heart problems, you know. He had very bad health issues. But it didn't stop him, and he was just unbelievably courageous. And I think anybody that's met him, or at least got to know him, will just never forget him.
Can you tell us about some of the disputes? Obviously, you were involved with the London Transport and the undergrounds. This has seen massive changes just in my lifetime. The network, I think it was just before the London bombings. Maybe that's a coincidence that it was privatised. And then also since, there's been all these attempts to get rid of human beings from the tube network, replace them with various sorts of cameras and toll booths and things that you go past and go click as you go past them. So, what sort of things were you involved with him over the disputes within the RMT and within London Underground?
Well, it was everything, really. It was everything from cleaners to caterers to our London Underground workers themselves going on strike. He was very supportive of outsourced workers who weren't employed by the company and had really rubbish terms and conditions. Many of them were migrant workers, and they had a very precarious existence. But the main one was really the most important one to me was a couple of years ago, when the same Pedro Mihajs, who had been sacked 10 years ago, he was actually employed by the RMT union. And David was the only journalist of either left or right or so-called left that was prepared to cover the story when the RMT sacked him. And this was the man's fearlessness. He used to go up there every day to make sure that the pickets were okay by filming them. The pickets were facing horrendous abuse from the staff going in. Mick Lynch crossed the picket line. Eddie Dempsey crossed the picket line. John Leach crossed the picket line. The whole nine yards, they all crossed the picket. Alex Gordon famously crossed the picket line and kicked a kicked a board over, and David caught it all on camera and got it out there. So that was to me right, the time where I would just went, this guy is phenomenal, right? He's a Rottweiler. He's like, and I don't mean that in a way he's aggressive, because he wasn't aggressive at all, but he was like an absolute dog with a bone, and he would not let go. If he thought something was wrong, he was just going to prove that it was wrong and expose it. And that's why I loved him. And I did. And we all kind of did. We all just loved David.
Okay, so where about how you mentioned you had some heart condition. He told me that as well, and I met him back in July, had a lovely chat with him. He absolutely insisted on paying for our evening meal, which listen, I will no, I'm paying. No. He'd gone over to the bar and actually paid the bill before we could actually stop him, so this was someone who was brilliantly generous as well as kind, wholeheartedly into what he was doing, but you say fearless too. He actually died on the job, didn't he?
He did, and I mean, look, it's horrible that he was taken from us so early, but in fact, he couldn't have scripted it better. He couldn't have scripted his exit better, and he's probably having a sneaky laugh now in heaven at us, because it just been to the shop to pick up his favorite tea bags. He came back through the picket line and started covering the Palestine demonstration. But Palestine was an issue he was absolutely, passionate about. And he then saw an incident where a racist thug attacked one of the protesters. And David being David, ran across the road to capture this on camera. Now, I don't know if that had anything to do with his demise, but there certainly was a raised excitement level. And David collapsed and passed away doing what he loved, reporting on Palestine, campaigning for the hunger strikers, the Fulton 24. Cameron Ahmed is being held in the prison, Pentonville prison, which we were outside of. And me and David had a we shared a sort of quirky sense of humor, almost a Monty Python-esque sense of humor at times. And the way he went was just kind of him. If you like, I think he would have wanted to go like a.
Well, that's an incredible thing to say. Can you just tell us a little bit more about the protests and what it was all about? I mean, you mentioned obviously the hunger strike and outside, but what's the context of all of this? The reason you're outside Pentonville?
As you know, David was a fearless critic of any sort of state authoritarianism and the state's attempt to close down the rights of the free press. And he'd campaigned for Julian Assange before. And the whole absolute debacle around the Fulton 24, who are young people who allegedly broke into an Elbit factory and damaged quadcopters and drones that would be used to murder children in Gaza. And then, of course, they were declared terrorists by the prescription of Palestine Action, by the same people, by the same government, the Labour Party, who shamelessly dressed in suffragette colours and even suffragette clothes to commemorate a direct action group like the suffragettes. Who let off bombs, believe it or not, who w took a whip to Churchill, who threw themselves in front of horses, chained themselves to railings, smashed windows, damaged property. The same government that was celebrating the suffragettes were now outlawing the modern equivalent of the suffragettes. And me and David shared that outrage of what was going on. As far as we were concerned, and we still are concerned, I'm concerned, these people were doing their duty under international law by doing everything in their power to stop a genocide, and they should be given awards for them, awards, not imprisoned. And the hunger strikers, they've been brought into prison, they've been maltreated, they've not been given bail after 6 months like everyone else, and most of them are now in over a year. They're having intercepted communications with family. They're not being allowed to see family. One of them has been isolated in the north of England, where her family is in London. And we've now got Tuweta Hoxha and Cameron Ahmed, who are both in hospital because of the hunger strike. And this is very, very serious. They're now into the fourth week of the hunger strike, and even if it's resolved, their bodies may never recover because the organs start to eat themselves. At this point, they start to take the body to keep the brain alive starts eating the heart, eating the liver, eating the other organs. So David was there to try to save lives, and I think that just summed the man up, and he was determined to get justice. Not just for the hunger strikers, but they lift the ban on Palestine action, the ridiculous ban. And of course, for Britain, they stopped participating in a genocide by giving the Israelis arms.
I mean, one thing my memories of David is his sense of humour. He would never ever, even though you're dealing with these really grave matters, never ever take it too seriously. And that's one thing I loved about the guy. Just his it, there was a sort of levity about it as well. It was never going to overburden him in terms of, a sort of dark feelings. And yes, there was that, but it was always a sense of the ridiculousness of it and the absurdity of some of the claims that are being made by the authorities. Anyway, there is a candlelit vigil tomorrow on Saturday for David. That is outside Pentonville Prison, which if anyone has never been there, is on Caledonian Road in London, and that's at 6 p.m. on Saturday, the 6th of December, 2025. I wonder, that spirit of being at these witnessing in a way, and that's what David was. He was someone with the camera witnessing what was going on and doing the job. I suppose that we would like to think and hope that the all this technology around us, the billions of pounds worth of central mass media, the BBC, ITV, Sky, all these people with their incredible technology. He was able to do it on his own, and he was poking that camera into places that those they fear to tread.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll just say that the commemoration that the nearest tube stations are Caledonian Road in Barnsbury, which is on the overground, and the nearest tube was on the Piccadilly line, which is Caledonian Road. It's just one stop from King's Cross. Yeah, but that this was the thing, David. I mean, he had a heart like a lion. He was, if he thought a cause was just and people were getting oppressed, he was going to go and tell that story. And all these organizations you mentioned have got all this equipment. The police have got all this surveillance equipment, but of course it's what they use it for, what they choose to use it for. And they choose to use it to uphold the system and they uphold the power structures that exist. And David was totally against that. He wanted a far more egalitarian, far more just world, and he used his camera extremely effectively to expose hypocrisy. When union leaders are crossing picket lines, or the police who are supposed to protect the citizens are carting off old age pensioners for holding up a sign opposing genocide, David was there and defend Julian Assange, his fellow reporter. The man gave months of his life just to the RMT causes and never asked for a penny. The most I would do was buy him something to eat and have a cup of tea. He loved cups of tea, and he was just the most unselfish, lovely person. And I think I'm not particularly religious myself, but David is from German Jewish and English heritage. He was raised an atheist, and then he converted to Christianity, became a Christian, and then later on in his life, I believe about a decade ago or some, maybe longer, he converted to Islam, and he never even mentioned that to me. Over all the time that I knew him, he never mentioned it. Didn't make it a big issue. But if you think that all the people that make a big thing of their religions, he was the holiest of the lot. He was the person that followed all the three major Abrahamic religions to the key, to the letter, and yeah, that was him, an absolutely special man.
He's left the world though in a difficult spot. You know, we need more people like David. We've had this absurd. We would probably be joking with him about it. With David Lammy, this black ethnic minority justice secretary now
Oh, God.
suspending jury trials in the UK. Not all of them apparently, but saying, "Oh, we just can't afford them anymore." Tearing up Magna Carta, which is, I
Yes,
think, that's around about
exactly.
700, 800 years, 800 years
Yes.
old, roughly,
Yes.
which has been the basis of many judicial systems all around the world. It's been an example, in fact. So David Lammy is deciding to tear that up. We've also got, as you said, some really crazy arrests of people who are obviously trying to stop crime. Unbelievable, really, as well as this concept of arresting somebody for praying near a abortion clinic who is actually not even saying anything. So the it seems to me like, you know, we need more people who are prepared to risk themselves to poke their cameras into the, I mean, you know, so social media is sometimes nowadays the only place to find what's actually really going on. So what would you say to people who like the sound of what David was up to and are thinking, well, maybe that's me?
Yeah, well, I think that, when fascism arrives, it's not going to advertise its arrival with unfailing swastikas. What we have is creeping authoritarianism, and I believe we're on the verge of fascism now in America. I think that the Trump administration and the treatment of people of color is bordering on, well, it's bordering on, it is mild fascism, if you like. They're deporting people because of their skin color. The outrageous comments that came out with about Somalians the other day was just off the wall. And so fascism can happen. It can happen even in a democracy. And of course, Germany was a democracy before it came fascist. Italy was a democracy before it came fascist. And we have British fascism will come dressed in a Union Jack and wearing a suit and tie. So it's absolutely important that we have people and they bear witness to what's going on and have an analysis. Funny enough, before Labour were elected, me and David had a long conversation about Starmer and how he was going to crack down on protests. We knew he was a Zionist. We knew his wife was a Zionist, and we knew that they would bear crackdown on Palestinian protests in particular. No one imagined that they were going to try to do away with the jury trials. I mean, that was a step we didn't even see, but. Look, if we've got billions of pounds to give to the Ukraine, billions of pounds to give to NATO, if we've got tax breaks for billionaires and multinational companies, that money can be used to fund the justice system and have an adequate justice system. Let's have children in decent education in hospitals and use the government funds for these kind of things. They have a justice system, and let's do a whip round for the Ukraine and the royal family and see how much they get. So that's the kind of world David wanted. He wanted a proper welfare system in his country, publicly funded and publicly run.
Well, it's what we deserve. I think it's fair to say. Candlelit vigil, as I said, is for David Lear is on Saturday, 6th of December 2025, 6 p.m. outside Pentonville Prison, Caledonian Road. And Steve, I'll leave you to just remind listeners about how to get there.
Yeah, so you catch the tube from King's Cross, Piccadilly Line. One stop from King's Cross is Caledonian Road, or you can get the London Overground to Caledonian Road in Barnsbury. They're about just over a 5 minute walk from there to Pentonville Prison. So anybody will tell you where it is, and hopefully you can come along and help pay respect to the life of an absolutely unique human being. Who was loved by everybody?
And whereabouts are the sorts of protests that David was turning up at, Steve? Because they're occurring around London from time to time anyway, and into the future, aren't they?
They're all over the place, usually outside courts, outside Parliament. There's so many court cases going on against people, the High Court. You've got the Old Bailey, several courts being used for the trials of the Fulton 24 and other people who have been arrested and charged with ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous charges of terrorism. These are not people that are running around, and carrying out some sort of armed struggle. They're people who are throwing paint on planes. And yeah, the protests we've covered are just mostly in London, Trafalgar Square, of course. But what else can I say? I think that which is the struggle carries on, the lucha continua, as they say.
That's right. Well, David's no longer with us, but all those that were doing the sort of stuff he was doing still are. Thanks, Steve Headley, very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for the invitation.